truth is, we won the election by a landslide. We won it big. Today, I'm going to give you the facts that every American needs to know. Let's go back.
Whoa, bitch, get out the way. Get out the way, bitch, get out the way.
Thanks to the Jimmy Kimmel Show for the open. Enjoy Mar-a-Lago. Goodbye forever, Donald Jackass Trump. Today is January 21st, 2021. And did you know that yesterday a string of 10 palindrome dates in a row began? Yes, the date is the same forwards and backwards. That's right. Today is 12121. Tomorrow is 12221. Saturday is 12321. And all of this is supposed to represent good luck and prosperity. And maybe, just maybe, it was a good omen that palindrome week started on inauguration day. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 39th installment of this fine program. We call it the Godfathers of Podcasting. And this week, the show is brought to you by Kangol Hats, Camelback, Coffee Friend, Eyeglasses.com, Factory Supply Outlet, Air Vape, Fight TV, Just CBD, and NordVPN. Don't forget to visit the shop on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Check out some sweet merchandise. My name is Donnie DeSilva. Oh, do I know my name? My name is Donnie DeSilva, and it is my esteemed honor to introduce to you the Big John McCarthy and the Herb Dean to my Steve Mazzagatti, Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell, and your bro, Danny O.
Yo. Wow. UFC refs this week. I don't have the dreads anymore, but am I still Herb?
Yeah, you are a Herb.
Old school.
Wait, does that make hold up. Does that make me Peaches? If we're gonna old school, because you gotta have Peaches and Herb, right?
Together. That would make him cream, and that's just nasty.
I got a question going back because you were talking about Kangols and stuff. Could we get like GOP Kangols?
I know that
absolutely.
Would be,
we're
that
on would it, be baby. The we are yeah. on it.
All right. Speaking of old school,
is there anything more legendary than the Kangol hat when it comes to apparel, men's accessory,
rope chain?
If you're talking hip hop fashion, yeah, for sure.
Well, rope chains. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Go to godfathersofpodcasting.com. Check out our sponsors. Go to the Kangol button, and you can order your Kangol hats today with a special discount just for you, GOP listeners.
Bro, this is our first episode in a non-Trump era, man.
Hey.
It's feeling nice.
Feeling good. It's the first time ever that I actually sat and watched an inauguration concert.
Oh, did you?
What did you think of it?
I like the joke that someone made about, you know, to paraphrase Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go J-Lo.
You think they did a good job with her, performance?
I thought it was fine.
It's no Mariah Carey on New Year's, but I mean, did they do a good job?
I thought it was all right. I mean, Lady Gaga came out, she rocked the anthem. They had J-Lo performing with the This Land Is Your Land. I mean, everything they did, I thought was really tasteful. It was pure Americana, but it had like this wholesome, like, feeling of, you know what, we're gonna try and fucking make this shit work,
right?
And I was with it.
What'd you think of Homegirl's poem? I feel bad because I've forgotten her name, and I didn't get to see. I was on set yesterday and missed the inauguration. I only saw clips, but she seems to be the biggest trending participant in yesterday's inauguration.
Well, the real most
other than Bernie Sanders.
Meme that's everywhere. Yeah. That was Amanda Gorman.
Amanda Gorman, that's right. Thank 22 you.
22 years old that had that poem calling for unity and togetherness.
Yes. I only got to see clips.
Really, really well done. Powerful poem. And how often do you say that, right? Like, that poem was beautiful. Like,
well, really, you know, it was. Yeah, it was, man. And I mean, for anybody who's been in the scene, like, shouts to my homie Dwayne Morgan, who is like a well-known and well-respected and very successful poet from here in Toronto. That's a scene where there's a lot of tests, almost like there's an underground hip-hop scene that we're kind of more aware of, and there are poets, You know what I'm saying? And you know that spoken word style of poetry generally has a lot, especially in the Black community, has a lot of power behind it because it's content, because of the pain and suffering that comes from the place where the person or the poet was inspired to write it to begin with. And I thought it was amazing that they had a Black spoken word poet at the inauguration, because for people who haven't figured it out yet, there is a huge hope that this is a new era, not just of a presidency, but of a new way of treating people, looking at others, if not as equals, at least with some measure of respect. Because over the past 4 years, we've seen a stripping of even common and human decency between people. And I love that this young woman was able to go up there and literally have the world as her audience and share her talent, but also her words. Her very important words with the world. That was really dope, man.
There was such like an underlying, like that was the theme of the entire thing, right? Mm-hmm. Unity, everything from like right. what everybody was saying down right. to like to the monochrome colors that everybody was wearing.
That's right.
Like it was, they sent a message. This is what we are hoping for.
Yeah,
Kamala Harris with her Lisa Simpson inspired outfit.
There's a wow. Simpson. I'm starting to believe, guys. I mean, conspiracy.
Here's the thing. No, but here's the thing. It's pretty easy to draw that thing because purple is that color of unity. So for the Correct. Simpsons to take something like that in a cartoon sure. just means that they've done their homework from the past. You know what I mean? And it just happens to fall into suit. So, I mean, congrats. But I mean, you know, I thought the inauguration was pretty good for what I got to see of it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I thought that everybody did a fantastic job, and you know, he kind of like boom, right to work, started yeah. getting stuff done. You know what I mean? There's some feathers being ruffled. Don't get it twisted. There's already some feathers being ruffled, but you know.
Let me touch on that, Tid, because yeah, first of all, I found it hilarious. I have a good friend of mine, Jason Blackman, who's been trolling on Parler and looking at like all these really? QAnon, you know, sites and whatever else, and trying to read what people are talking about, and okay. The stuff he pulls from there, man, it's just comedy gold. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's been going on right now, or not right now, but for the last week or so, was all these extreme right Trump heads were convinced that the inauguration was a setup by Trump to get all these liberals, all these Democrats in one place so they could all be assassinated simultaneously.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
And then Trump would be reinstated as president. This
of
is
course, because that's how it works.
What thought. Yeah.
And
now that the inauguration has happened, they're like, I don't get it. That's what went wrong? And then there's all this, you know, all these memes that are going around, right? Sure. Okay, so now that he's in office, the whole world's going to be better. COVID is gone and everything's better just because Biden is there, right, libtards? Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you this. On his first day in office, mm-hmm. Joseph Biden did the following. Mm-hmm. He had the United States rejoin the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. He asked federal agencies to extend eviction and foreclosure moratoriums through March 31st. He asked the Education Department to extend the federal student loan payment and interest pause through September 30th of 2021. He placed a temporary moratorium on oil and gas leasing in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. He began to reverse more than 100 different actions that Trump took to roll back environmental regulations. He rescinded Trump's 1776 commission and revoked Trump's order limiting diversity training. He stopped all wall construction at the southern border and reversed Trump's directive to exclude undocumented immigrants from the census numbers used to reparation each state's share of congressional seats and electoral college votes. To put it bluntly, the man got to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like immediately mm-hmm. he got to work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're left or right. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter
if you're left or right.
I think that answers it does if you're talking about testicular cancer.
Well, if you lose both, then it doesn't matter either. But all that being said, the man got to work day one. And unfortunately, the perception by his detractors is going to be that he just went in and started undoing all the stuff that their guy had done. But that their guy had done was ridiculous.
First of all, they're talking about this dude that they hail like a god, whose main mission was to go in and undo what Obama had done, specifically Obamacare, which to my knowledge, he hasn't even replaced with anything remotely.
He never had a plan.
He never proposed a plan. So to me, the litmus test of whether or not Joe Biden has made good decisions is to see how much each of them have pissed off the Trumpians. The more pissed off they are, the more it seems like that was a smooth move, Joe. Good job. Because you said he got to work right away. The truth is, he's been working. Biden's been working from the day he knew that he was going to become president. And as president-elect, that man was out there in Delaware, where have you, and was because when you start on day one, and if what you're saying is true, over 100 different legislations or what have you, like, one thing I can say about what he has to do with his job, it's obviously a hard one, but it's easy in the sense that Trump did so much fucked up shit. It was easy to go, we got to fix that. We got a whole lot of, there's no guessing game. What should we do to fix America? Every motherfucking thing he did, let's fix that. that's gonna set his presidency off on the right way, especially if the Trumpians is mad at it.
I feel like a lot of his stuff is going to, you know, we had the United States had a 4-year speed bump for what, you know, Obama and him were trying to do for 8 years. You know what I mean? Like, here's the thing. Right. You got to remember is that like Biden didn't have to listen to just Trump for the last 4 years. He's had to listen to him for the last like 12 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Going into this. So like Trump's lucky he got off that easy, quite frankly, with, you know, the stuff that could have been done. Here's the thing that I would like to find out about and would like to hear more about, because apparently Biden's first call to the first political guy in the world happened to be Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And I'm sure that the topic at hand right there was a lot that has to do with this, what is it, the XL Keystone pipeline, you know, situation and stuff like that, right?
All the Trump jokes, then they started talking about that.
I'm sure. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? But I'm sure that there is going to be a lot of back and forth on this one. I'm interested to see how this one plays out. I'm going to reserve judgment on it right now. Right. I think that, you know, the first thing that I look forward to is that they need to get that vaccine going so that we can get that border back open so that we can start communicating that way with our goods and trades and everything like that. That is so wonderful. Basically, I say that because I need to go shopping in Wegmans.
One of the things that Biden came in and did on day one was he had the United States of America rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement.
Right.
And if any of your followers of mine on Facebook, I posted a tweet from Senator Ted Cruz.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
That fucking sock puppet. This guy tweeted out, and I quote, by rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement, President Biden indicates he's more interested in the views of citizens of Paris than the jobs of the citizens of Pittsburgh. This agreement will do little to affect the climate and will harm the livelihoods of Americans. This fucking guy. I love the comment that some celebrities were posting. Like, Seth Rogen responds, "Fuck off, you fascist." And then someone else posted, and it was like, it's just called the Paris Climate Agreement because it was signed in Paris. It has nothing to do with people of Paris. It's like if you think the Pirates or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are facing the New Orleans Saints, they're not actually Saints. and the Buccaneers aren't actually pirates.
Hold on, wait.
What? Wait.
So wait. You're
what about the Browns?
They're well.
So you're saying that Plaster of Paris isn't actually from France?
I don't know. But oh my God, Ted Cruz, you fucking sack of meat. You are so stupid.
That is that tweet still up, or did he go and delete it after realizing how much of an idiot
he is? He has a couple of Twitters going, does he not?
Don't they
like
all?
Yeah, exactly. Like he's got his Senator Ted Cruz, and then he's got his Ted Cruz. You know what I mean?
Right.
His Senator Ted Cruz is the one that he spews all of this ridiculous rhetoric, you know what I mean, that he's got going on. It's out of
fucking. You know what though, bro? I rate you for having posted that, Don. I'm going back into retirement dealing with the idiots on social media, especially because it's official now. Biden's been inaugurated. He is the president. He's already made all these challenges. Let them be mad. Sit back and watch it like your favorite show and go, you know what? Y'all argue amongst yourselves now, because the proof will be and is in the pudding. From the inauguration, which we just talked about, which had the theme of unity, to the changes that he's making that are literally create greater unity between his nation and others. And of course, one of the most important things is to have his citizens be safer and healthier by actually putting a plan in place to attack the pandemic in a way that Trump completely ignored. So if they're mad at that, let them be mad. The proof will be in the pudding the way the things unravel here, man.
Funny thing, since our last episode, I had a little phone call with a mutual friend of ours and former guest on the show, Rico Montana.
Yeah.
And Rico said to me in his most Rico voice, he said, "Hey, Don, you guys are still fucking talking politics." And I said, "Yeah, you know, like there's a lot going on." "Ah, fuck. It's all a work." Right? And I was like, yeah, you know what, man? Like, we're going to talk about it, but I'll guarantee you this. After the next episode following the inauguration, you probably won't hear political talk on the Godfathers of Podcasting.
I know.
For a long, long time. We're going to get back to talking about mindless, dumb shit. Like, how often did Dan touch himself this week?
We're getting, 7.
I think that's under.
I think we all know the number. Everybody knows the number.
It's a multiple of 10, no matter what.
It's 10.
10's on the lower scale of things. But if I do 19, you know, I got to do one more to make it.
I mean, there's still days left, too, right?
That's
you know?
True.
Yeah, but it is going to be crazy. And I mean, this just we're going to have to come up with bits again. Is this what you're trying to say?
I know.
Right? We'll do a little show prep every now and then. Oh,
Speaking of tweets, Michael Rappaport, I think, might have put it best. He goes, "Now we can go back to having politics being boring as fuck the way they were meant to be." You know what I'm saying? Because when you have this clown circus shit show, whatever you want to call it, going on every day, and I've said this many times on the show and off the show, it ceases to be about politics. It becomes, you know, it's funny. Rico told me it was a work, Donnie. It actually got me thinking about how the past, let's call it 12 years or so, have been a pretty good wrestling angle. If you think about it, right? Obama was repping as the champ. He had the belt. You know what I'm saying? And when it came time to retire, the worst villain in the whole Fed took over. And look at this. This is like what a huge WrestleMania type pop this was to have Obama's tag team partner come in with a woman too and deal with his case and take him out. If you think about it, man, maybe it is a work because there's been so much excitement around this, like it's been a wrestling show. I'm just glad that it's finally, you know, the baby face got the belt.
Hold on. If it was a wrestling show, it would have ended differently. At the inauguration, when Joe stepped to the mic, Obama would have pulled off his blazer with a Trump t-shirt and said, "I'm coming for you, baby."
I don't want to gloss over the fact, though, that my girl, Kamala Harris, is the vice president. This is a very important thing to reiterate. Of course, she's not only the first Black/South Asian. But the first woman ever to hold that office. And it's an amazing, amazing accomplishment and also speaks volumes about the type of administration that is now in power. And I hope that like Obama's presidency, this gives a lot of hope and just positive energy to young women, including little girls like my baby girl, who, you know, I hope will continue to aspire to be anything she wants to be in this world. So, really,
now we officially shut the book on Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
In our lives and on this show. And let's switch gears to something completely different. Tid, we've had, I can't even tell you how many questions, emails, direct messages, everything else under the sun, people getting at us, godfatherspodcasting@gmail.com, getting at us on Facebook, Instagram, whatever it may be, saying, can you please give us an update on Kelly Tidwell, Notorious T.I.D.'s wife, and what's been happening? We announced that she was dealing with some health issues prior to the holidays. Tid, can you give us an update? Because people are asking.
How many? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, absolutely.
At least two. Me and Dan. You know what?
It's been so crazy and so hectic and stuff like that. And then, you know, with everything going on and the pandemic and Trump in the election and the Capitol Hill and everything, and that it tied up on the show. And when we ended last week, I was like, oh my God, we had a conversation. It's like,
yeah,
we forgot to talk about it. And I should probably talk about it because I owe it. I feel like I personally owe it to everybody, you know, that has been so good to us during all of this and everything like that, to let them know. And I feel like we haven't, you know, we didn't have a chance to touch on it so much. But let me just say very quickly, because time is of the essence this week. So she had gone in for a full surgery to take everything out and see what it would be, what the next steps would be. That being said, they did the whole surgery. They came back. They said, yeah, there was a metric shit ton of growth of everything down there. But we feel like we've gotten everything. It was, they went and did a complete hysterectomy, did everything. So they are very confident in that. Basically what this means is that she does not have to go through with chemo. Mm-hmm. She does not have to go through with radiation. What she does have to do is she has to get more regular checkups, which in turn, you know what I mean? Instead of once a year, it's once every 6 months, once every 3 months, whatever the case may be, if something were to happen, because there is a percentage chance of this stuff being able to grow back, right? Of tumors being able to grow back in this area, then they would deal with it accordingly then. But the doctor was very confident. So I would just like to say, first and foremost, thank you on behalf of myself and my lovely wife. We appreciate everything, all of the well wishes the entire time. It has been nothing, nothing but great. It's been nothing but gracious from all of you. Much love every single day of our lives. And so now that being said, we can get done with the pandemic and kind of move along, I guess, right?
That would be great, man. So glad to hear all that, man.
I want to touch on a similar, not similar, but another health-related story that we know, because I was extremely proud of the listeners of this show that contributed to the thousands and thousands of dollars that were raised for Tidwell and his wife, Kelly. Over just the span of a few days, thousands and thousands of dollars were raised. And I was extremely proud of our listening audience and friends and everyone else who contributed. There's another major story that I need to bring everyone's awareness to. And I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not, but longtime mutual friend of the show. She was a guest on our old show several times in the past, back in 2009, when we put together a calendar that was done raising proceeds for cancer research. This person was one of the ones that participated, flew in from the United States on her own dime, came in, donated her time, was a complete professional, Melissa Coates. Melissa Coates was a bodybuilder. You've seen her on the cover of Muscle and Fitness, Flex Magazine, Muscle Mag, Muscular Development. She was in the WWE. Yeah. She was one of the Godfather's hoes. She trained with Killer Kowalski. For the last bunch of years, she's been known as the Super Genie, managing ECW legend Sabu. And Melissa Coates, a very short time ago, was diagnosed with a serious blood clot in her leg. Right.
Yep.
And she and her doctors had to go through the decision, a life-saving decision, to amputate her leg above the knee. As a result of that, you can imagine for somebody whose entire life is based on her image, her physicality, work is not an option right now. Her medical bills are through the roof. There is a GoFundMe that's been set up to try and raise $50,000 for her expenses. About half of that has been reached at this point. I'm going to post the GoFundMe link on the Godfather Podcasting, and I'd ask that all of you go out there and support Melissa. She is a good person. She's a good soul. You know, and she would, you know, drop everything on a dime to come and help you. Like I said, we were doing this sexy ladies calendar back in 2009. I told her, hey, we're doing this for breast cancer research. She's like, yeah, I'm there. She literally dropped everything, flew into Toronto and said, what do you need? You know, and, super awesome. Great, great, individual. I ask that you,
crazy.
You know, you got $5, send her $5 and every little bit helps, guys. So Melissa Coates, if you want, you can just Google it on GoFundMe, or we will post the link up on the Godfather
podcast. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. That is crazy.
Wow. It sucks, man. So,
right. It's crazy. It's crazy how one day, one day you're there. And then the next day this thing comes along and it's what I've said. It's not really, you know, the things that are thrown in front of you. It's how you react to them. And like, you know, up to this, like she's been reacting very well and, you know, I wish her nothing but the best of luck, her and, her and, you know, Sabu as well.
You already heard the story, right, Ted?
Yeah. Yeah, I already knew. I'd already known about it. It's crazy. I heard about it when it happened, when she had gone in and stuff like that for surgery, through Sabu. So it's crazy how one day it's one thing and the next day it's next. You know, so like, take advantage, man. Take advantage of it while you can. You know what I mean? Like, let's do everything we can to love one another. Let's have more unity. God damn it.
Absolutely. 100%, right? Man.
I would like to get both your thoughts on a story that broke about 24 hours ago that to me is mind-boggling. FIBA.
Oh, yeah.
The International Federation for Basketball Competition has decided to fine Team Canada for not competing in an upcoming international tournament, which is a qualifier. Sure. Canada basically came out and said, we're not coming. There's a fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
Like our professional sports teams aren't even playing in our country. You know, well, hockey is because all the hockey
teams. But only in our country. No crossing the border.
They're not going across the border. We're like, I can't believe this decision by actually, I can. FIBA and FIFA and a lot of these organizations are so money grubbing. They are so like just all about finding every dollar they can. And just the whole thing to me sounds completely tone deaf. Like we're in the midst of
a
pandemic. Their Team Canada is making their, it's not like they don't want to play.
Yeah.
Right. And I just pulled it up here. It's a $227,000 fine to Canada basketball. Let me tell you something. If Canada basketball had $227,000, they'd be better.
Yeah.
They don't have $227,000. We're going to have to start a GoFundMe for
Team Canada.
Ted, what are your thoughts?
Mike Tuck needs to own up, man. He needs to contribute right away. That's what I'm saying. Mike, you know you're listening. Get out there. Pony up some of that money, bruh.
Not his fault.
Oh, man. No, it is absolute insanity that any governing body would even consider this. I understand. There's, you know, they're like, oh my God, this is so far in the future. We have to have these qualifying things and stuff like that. But let's like realistically, it's a game that takes a course of a couple of hours. You can put these things back if you have to. The way that information travels, if you need to have that game so that you can make up a bracket, you know what I mean? Like the NBA is putting these guys into. This is for a qualifying for a tournament for qualifying for more tournaments, basically. Right. So, I mean, I don't
know. Talking about practice.
March Madness.
Not quite March Madness.
Yeah.
But do we see like you can push these back? There's no reason for FIBA to, you know, be trying to push this kind of agenda on these guys at this time whatsoever, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's not
it's
cool. They make shitty shoes too, right?
It's qualifying for the AmeriCup for anyone that's curious. And the tournament was supposed to be February 18th to 22nd. There are some conspiracy theorists that are saying the real reason Canada is not participating is because their head coach, Nick Nurse, is busy with his NBA team during that same time period. The truth is, Nick Nurse already said, look, we have a whole coaching staff that'll take the team and go.
Right.
You know, just like some players can't go because they're busy with their NBA teams. Same with me.
As far as I'm concerned, the shit is crazy, man. You know, speaking of March Madness, it was canceled. I mean, do they know that the motherfucking Olympics was supposed to go down last year? Canceled. Like, this pandemic's not a joke, bro. And the sad thing that, like, it's one of those things that I've retired from talking about on social media because I'm so tired of actually trying to get people to understand that this is something worth taking seriously. It is something that can impact your health to the point where there are many people who have died. So if you're choosing to not do something literally for safety and health reasons, I don't see how that could come into play, especially when much larger sport associations have made extreme changes to their seasons. And we've even talked about this on the show, whether or not they should be having seasons. We obviously know now that both the NHL and NBA and MLB, for that matter, have figured out ways to play without any fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. And whatever other protocol they're taking, they are still putting everyone at risk. They are doing their best to play it safe. They're not in a bubble this year. They're still traveling. So even I have my, I wonder how safe that shit is. But to go to the length of fining a team, especially in an amount that much during a pandemic, when obviously there are smarter and safer things to do than to even have the tournament, it just makes no sense.
Dude, that size of a fine would like tank the entire WNBA.
Imagine.
You know, they'd be paying that off for 5 years. They'd have to go onto a payment plan.
Can we put that fine on layaway?
Yeah, with the stereo.
No, that's a lot of money.
How about just tell me I'm naughty for 85 cents? Put me in the corner for $3.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds absolutely ridiculous.
No,
to
it's
me.
So stupid, man.
You know, the whole thing is beyond comical when you think about it.
Are they fighting it? Can they fight it?
There's got to be some kind of
appeal. Man.
Who do you appeal to? Like, you're ratting FIBA on who? On FIBA?
You know what's going to happen is some NBA player, somebody like that is going to, you know, dude, they're going to come up with it. Somebody's going to pay it. What they should do is they should just show up and like give it to them in like aluminum cans. You know? Say, here, go cash these in.
Two.
You know?
Do you remember that story? It might even be urban legend. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a nerd that fell for it. But there was a story years ago about how Apple successfully sued Android for ripping off the look and feel of their operating system. And it was like a multi-million dollar fine. So Samsung or whoever it was apparently paid the fine by sending the millions of dollars to Apple headquarters in pennies.
That's amazing.
Oh, I've heard that. Yeah.
Now, I don't know.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know if that's true either, but
I've seen photos of the millions of pennies, but it may just be urban legend. I don't know.
That reminds me of the dude. This could be urban legend too, although there was photos online, even though it could have been staged, of the guy who had to give half of all of his belongings to his wife in his divorce. So he cut every single thing he owned in half and gave her the half of all his shit. Half a couch, half a TV. Had everything.
I would do that.
Yeah.
I would, but you'd have to do it like Donnie would do that, but with like a lightsaber or some nerdy shit or something.
Oh yeah. He'd probably have it too. If you had a lightsaber, Tim, seriously, what's the first thing you would slice? Because that would be fun shit.
I would go Bigfoot hunting in Oklahoma because apparently that's an upcoming thing that they're trying to pass through legislation. I don't know if you heard this one or not. That was Yeah, man, this is the crazy times we live in. A dude has actually trying to get this thing passed through that they will have Bigfoot hunting season down there. Think about that. If that isn't the biggest cash grab,
oh man,
they're just gonna be like, yeah, no, we can get these guys to send us
that shit is gonna
$75 a head for a tag to go hunt Bigfoot.
That shit is gonna end up. That shit is 100% gonna end up on the news with somebody getting shot,
dude.
Guaranteed. Somebody who paid their money. Oh, we're gonna hunt Bigfoot, and tall dudes. Donnie better not do that shit because he will get shot,
right?
By me. And I'll be like, right? I caught Bigfoot. Where'd you go, Don? I thought that was a pretty decent disc.
Oh, man. Yeah, he bounced.
Yeah.
He must have, like, right away. I don't know what happened there.
Hey, there's another Donnie that had to go. So it's the week of Donnie's getting out.
Do you think that'll be a problem? You know what I mean? Like, has anybody – nobody's heard anything, right? Like, because he's got no Twitter – is Parler's not a thing anymore.
It's interesting. I know. Like,
what is it? What is that thing? They got that the Gab I've been hearing.
I don't
is
have
that
any
a thing or whatever. I don't know. Like Facebook's been quiet and stuff like that, but there's going to be now, you know, because well, he's gone. Like there's gonna be a slow trickle. There's gonna be a slow trickle.
Is there a part of you that's slightly sad about it? I mean, we've been wanting him to shut the fuck up for years. Are you slightly like, I want to know what this idiot's saying, just for entertainment purposes? Or are you glad to see this separation from our lives?
So a little bit column A, a little bit column B for me. You know what I mean? Like I could handle like a once a month. Right. You know what I mean?
Doses.
You know what I mean? Like yeah, like very, like, I mean, like, you know, an accompanied visit. You know what I mean?
You need supervised visits. Yeah.
Supervised visit,
right.
You know, once a month or whatever in a parking lot.
I get you. Yeah, yeah. For a short period of maybe an hour tops.
Yeah, but there ain't no sleepovers, bro.
No sleepovers. Yeah, man.
Sorry, guys. I had to drop off for a sec because I was just checking up on our featured guest this week. I think he might have been having a little bit of trouble getting into the studio, but he is about to join us momentarily. We are very excited to have this individual on, and we will do his introduction momentarily, just as soon as all of the technology fits in line and everything gets going, and hopefully there's no Daniel curse that prevents anything from working.
Hey man, we just had the best part of the show, guy. He just came in and
but you should watch it on godfathersofpodcasting.com.
You should check it out. You should check it out.
Do.
Yeah.
Always do. I was gonna ask very quickly, gentlemen, when you say this weekend there is a huge UFC event going on. Been a minute since we've done this, Tid, and the last time we tried to do this, Dan kayfabed.
Sure.
What do you say we do ourselves a big UFC online watch party? Because I want to see this main event, man.
Well, as a matter of fact, I will be doing something this week. I've already been asked to be part of a Twitch party, so to speak.
Wow.
Along with the THT guys. Big Ben Ortman's Brady Wedham and Matt Grant, who have this fantastic little group going and stuff. And they asked me to be a part of it. We did one last week, a Fight Companion. I have never personally done one of these Twitch things before. Apparently there's rules and regulations. So I found out after. So we're gonna have some fun, that's for sure. So
please, he's got a date, Donnie. He's unavailable.
Yeah, but like by all means, come by. I will put out the socials and stuff like that. And please join because we are actually going to try. It's not just a come watch or something like that. I'll send you the link. Come join the party. You guys come to join the party. Let's. I mean, this is as close as we're gonna get to a great big party. So let's do it.
So you're saying we can put a link up on the Godfathers of Podcasting in the next 24 hours, and we can invite everyone to come and join us for this Twitch party.
to come and watch. I will send you guys the link to come and join the party.
Right. That we can
and everyone else can come watch. We can broadcast out to everybody, right. And then everybody else can come watch all of us, the rest of the guys all hanging out, having fun, watching these fights at the same time. The best part is that nobody has like their links. Everybody's links are all different and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's kind of funny watching the reactions of everybody.
Fellas, it is time right now for the big hello. This man was born in the Caribbean before moving to Canada at 9 years of age. And back in 1996, Chris Tidwell and myself interviewed this man in what he told us was his first ever face-to-face interview of his entire career. Of course, he forgot all about that because, you know, he's a true pioneer in the sport of mixed martial arts. He's a five-time Canadian Jiu-Jitsu champion. He's a former K-1 and Pride fighter, and many fans will remember with distinct passion May 4th, 2001 at UFC 31. This man defeated Trump-loving conspiracy theorist Pat Miletich with a goddamn bulldog choke, and he won the UFC welterweight championship, becoming the first ever Canadian citizen to wear gold in that company. The list of names that this man has fought is absolutely iconic. Anderson Silva, Sakuraba, Dan Henderson, Henzo Gracie, and everyone remembers the controversial battles with Matt Hughes. These days, he's the owner and operator of Newton MMA, located just east of Toronto, Ontario, helping to develop the next generation of stars and spread the love of this sport. He may also be the only adult fan of Dragon Ball Z that never gets made fun of for it. And now it's time for three rounds with the Godfathers of Podcasting. Fighting out of Pickering, Ontario, originally weighing in at 170 pounds, but looking way more diesel today, the Ronin, Carlos Newton.
That's the best intro ever.
Wow. That's the only title Donnie's ever going to hold. Best intro giver of all time. I'll give you that title, bro.
Well, Carlos, how are you, man?
I'm good. Awesome. Just doing my thing.
Doing your thing. Now, listen, the cartoon nerds out there are going to ask us right away, how big a Dragon Ball Z nerd have you been your whole life, and are you still to this day?
Oh, I passed it on. My 8-year-old loves it. And we're playing a video game the other day, Dragon Ball Z game on PS4. Yeah, he loves it.
Setting up for this interview, I was watching some highlights of some of your old fights on YouTube with my 8-year-old son, and he saw your little pose down, you know, when you're doing the thing, and he's like, "Oh, Dad, is that like Street Fighter?" Because he loves playing Street Fighter. And yeah, he's like, that's like when I'm Ryu and I kick your ass with fireballs. And I'm like, "Nah, son, that's some Dragon Ball stuff." He's like, "Oh, I don't know about Dragon Ball." I'm like, "I know, I'm a bad father."
Yeah. I grew up on Street Fighter. Street Fighter honed a lot of my technique, learned a whole lot about the importance of timing. Yeah. Those are lessons like 11, 12
trained
years
by
old.
By Ken and Ryu, eh?
If you play Street Fighter, who's your character?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm Ryu. Yeah.
Who was it?
I was a Blanca man myself. Not
were
me.
You? Huh?
Yeah.
Blanca. Blanca was the sign of a guy that didn't know how to play.
Correct.
All he did was mash that in.
And electrocute motherfuckers. Don't forget.
Just mash that button, try to electrocute guys. You didn't know
how to play. The classic don't know how to play the game character is choose Blanca.
No,
I
did.
Yeah. No, I'll forgive it, Blanca too.
Yeah, he was dope though. You can't sleep. Brazilian monster.
It's funny, man. I know that it's a million years ago, but Tid and I have talked about this so many times. Way back when Tid and I were starting Virtually Canadian, we were like the one of the first programs to go on air and be one of the first ever online radio shows. And Tid and I were doing an MMA show, and we had you come in studio. And at the time, I wasn't too hip to your history, and Tid was a big fan of your work, and he was very familiar with what you had done. And I said, "So this Carlos Newton, he's going to be a big deal." He's like, oh yeah, he's good. And I remember sitting there and Tid and I watching you choke out Pat Miletich. And even though you didn't remember us, we felt so proud of you.
Oh, man.
You were like the local guy that made great.
No, so I appreciate that, guys. That was a long time ago, man.
Yeah, right.
It all rings bells, guys. It all rings bells.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, we talk about, and Donnie has mentioned it a couple of times, Carlos, the whole Pat Miletich tie with you and stuff like that, right? It's because you come from an era like Pat Miletich, that Pat Miletich camp, those guys that trained there. You come from that era, the Tito Ortiz's, the Randy Couture's, that early on where things were still a little rough around the edges, you know what I mean? Like they didn't have the same kind of rules that they've got in place now because of things that were happening back then. Do you still follow UFC and MMA and stuff like that?
I still do. I was the guy that started that class action lawsuit that's moving through the courts and
And so that brings me to my question, and this is the big one that I wanted to ask you, because I as somebody like yourself who has been there, who got out of it at a very young and healthy age and stuff like that, there's a story that surfaced about Spencer Fisher. I don't know if you're familiar with the story or not. Obviously, he's one of these guys that came out of that Pat Miletich camp and whatnot, right? So he was around there, and this is a guy who, you know, for those of you that don't know, I'll give you the quick synopsis and stuff like that, who went through, he was a poster boy. He was everybody. The fight between him and Sam Stout was like legendary. They had him on everything, and now he is just completely physically disabled because of what he's given to fighting. He's suffering from severe CTE. He was one of these guys that the UFC had set up, like, you know, the Matt Hughes and the Chuck Liddell, after they got the new deal where they just put him on that, here's $5,000 a month, thank you very much, we're just going to keep sending it to you. But unfortunately, recently, this has all come to an end, and it wasn't very long ago that the lawyers and everything in the UFC had cut him off completely. This is a guy who gave up his entire existence at such a young age. If anybody wants to, like, you can talk about wars back in the day, go back and watch Spencer Fisher stuff. I wanted to get your take as a guy with the lawsuit and stuff like that, who has been there on the inside. Do you think you got out of it at an early age? And was that something that was pressing on your mind when you got out of the competition, the fighting, you know what I mean, with the UFC? Or was it some completely different? I'm just, you know, talking
about it. I was lucky at a young age. I realized this thing's not structured for competition. It's structured purely to provide entertainment and line these guys' pockets. It's structured in a way for them to patently exploit you and suck every penny out of you till you're dry. And until a sport is structured like a competitive sport, like any other professional prize fighting sport, it's not a sport. It's just entertainment that is being passed off, you know, to seem like competition, but it actually is not. It's just guys picking who they want to fight on whatever night and making up entertainment as they go along. You know, and that's the thing. They like to say that, you know, oh, we're not a sport, we're entertainment. Go, you're a sport. You're supposed to be regulated by an athletic right. commission. But because the sport was brand new, they let you guys get away with how you want to structure it. It should be structured like boxing. But, you know, at the end of the day, they tried to avoid that by saying, oh, you know, we're entertainment. I go, yeah, you're entertainment. Of course you are. But not all entertainment sport, and all sport is entertainment.
Was there a last straw for you, a particular incident, event, or experience that you had with the company or the sport in general that made you say, that's it for me?
Yeah, when they call you a week before the fight, and if you don't, you don't have any other choice. I was like, "This, you guys are supposed to be working for me."
Right.
Yeah, and I should be able to fire ass and keep my title when I move from one promoter to another. If not, we should be structured like tennis. I fight for your title, and I frig off and go do the next one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no sport in the world that's structured like this, where a promoter can have exclusive contracts with an athlete and sanction their own title. There's no sport structure like that in the world. That's like Don King's wet dream. There's nothing of that. There's none. I dare you to find one. There's none.
Right.
So what, yeah. And not in the league sports are structured like that.
Right. Mm.
What's the solution, Carlos? How do they fix that at the highest level in the UFC?
At the highest level, they got to be forced. The courts has got to make them do it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I started that law, the antitrust lawsuit, because the sport is structured to be anti-competitive. It leads to a monopoly by default. It's just a sheer fact that if us as fighters all want to fight one another at some point, we all have to be fighting for the same promoter at some point.
Right.
It leads to a monopoly by default. Doesn't matter whether it be them or what. They just rigged it, being the first guys out of the gate. They just rigged it that way and poured enough cash behind it to establish the monopoly.
This weekend, Conor McGregor returns to the Octagon, and he's a guy that seems like every other week he's either retired, he's in the fight game, he's out of the fight game. He's been very, very public about, this is a billion-dollar company, I'm the top guy, you got to pay me more, or I'm not fighting anymore. And he's been very public, almost to the point of public criticism and to the point of ridicule from President Dana White. Do you think that's what it's going to take? Is it more of the top guys speaking out and saying, look, you have to treat us like the assets we are, or we're just not going to compete?
No, the top guys alone can't do it. It needs to be restructured. The courts need to fix it because they have all the levers. They can ride out Connor until the end of his career and then put the next guy in place. Their power comes from holding guys back and making sure there's not too many top dogs out there at the same time. Their power comes from, you know, holding shows on the same night as other promoters, which you never hear in boxing. You know, their power comes from being able to bench you and totally being able to matchmake. Matchmaking is a form of a competition. It is. And they completely control that aspect of it.
The antitrust lawsuit with the UFC, was that resolved or is it still ongoing?
That just got certified.
Okay.
It just got certified to go to litigation. So now the point where I know guys like Connor are talking to the lawyers and so forth, because guys like him are eligible to sue for damages. And when they're able to, and when the sport, the court hands down remedies, they're going to have to severely limit the exclusivity period of the of who they keep on their contract. Or the actual truth is that's only gonna put a band-aid on things. The remedy is they should not be allowed to have exclusive contracts with athletes. Athletes should be able to go play for Wimbledon, then from there go for the Australian Open.
Right.
All without missing a beat. You lose one, you move to the next one. Mm-hmm. All that missing a beat. And if you can win all seven in a row, you're the top dog. You know, that's the way they gotta structure it. Or you gotta use a sanctioning body. If you want to have this, if you as a promoter want exclusive rights to an athlete, you need to use a sanctioning body so that when you and that athlete part ways, the athlete is not parting ways with the title.
And so let me play devil's advocate. If I'm the UFC, for example, and I say, look, I need to have exclusive contracts. I can't have my fighters fighting for this promotion, that promotion, fighting guys that are not safe, don't know what they're doing. They're getting hurt. They're working on shows with minimal visibility, and then they're on the shelf for the next year because they tore their knee up or some other garbage, and it's not happening under our umbrella.
That happens now, man. Happens now. They do it on purpose, or they a lot of times are responsible for pushing athletes to the point where it happens. At the end of the day, it has to be structured like boxing.
You can still be the
ultimate championship fighting promotion,
right?
You just cannot put up your own title. You cannot put up your own title, make guys sign contracts where they are locked in so that they can have the title shot.
Right.
That coercion, that type of predatory exclusivity, that was banned in boxing decades ago.
Mm-hmm. That is
Go ahead. So let's say this lawsuit goes through litigation. Let's say everything works out perfectly and you guys win. Is the plan then to try to take this thing onto a federal level? Because you talk about only the
federal. Antitrust court is federal.
So that would force them to have to go which way? Would they have a choice then to go either to a sanctioning body?
Yeah, or, and there were sanctioning bodies before.
Right, but
they refused to use the sanctioning body because they said, oh, there's just another person they got to pay.
Right.
And that was their argument.
It reminds me, Mayweather pays
sanctioned bodies. Everyone does.
The parallels are there, even though the presentations are so different, but the parallels are there, and it's ironic because the two heads of each company hate each other so passionately. But the parallels are there between what you're talking about with the UFC and what's been happening for forever in the WWE.
Right. I was just going to say that.
Vince McMahon, who has a bunch of guys under contract, and they can't take sick days. They can't get hurt. If they get hurt, they're in danger of being terminated. If they stay home, they're in danger of being terminated. They can't go work for competition. If they're not being used for creative reasons, they can't go work somewhere else. They take their downside guarantee. If their downside guarantee has been paid out, you're done. The newest rule that they've put in the last few months, which has caused people to tender their resignation, is they can't go on Cameo. They can't go on Twitch. They can't do anything using their likeness to make any ancillary money. They have to literally do everything on their own. From whatever salary they're making, they have to pay their trans, they have to pay their hotels, they have to handle their business and then get their shows on time and everything else. Otherwise, they're fired.
Both of those forms of entertainment have the exact same structure. Right. It's just in one, the guys hit one another for real.
Yeah.
And that's why what you said was so enlightening, Carlos, because I have to admit, as a fan of both, I actually never thought of it that way and understood it that way. I recognize that while the WWE has certain rules in place that I don't particularly agree with, I get that it's an entertainment company and that they're creating shows for the purpose of entertainment. Yeah. Everything you said about MMA is completely correct. It is an actual sport. And the fact that they are, you know, the fighters are forced, obviously, to maintain their allegiance to one company and only fight for their belt, it really does change the way in which athletes are supposed to be able to compete freely. You mentioned that you do keep up with it and watch MMA. Has it impacted your love for the sport in general, knowing that the biggest company has manipulated the sport in the way that it has?
It has completely eliminated competition. I should be able to watch guys, different matchups happening with different promoters.
Right.
I should be able to even promote my own athletes. Yeah. Mm. It's interesting you bring up wrestling, because wrestling went through the exact same litigation a couple decades ago, and they were getting their butt kicked in a lawsuit for antitrust violation. And come the final day, they actually realized, and they won on this argument. They basically told the judge, hey, wait a minute. We're not sport. We're entertainment.
Right.
And then they realized, oh, this is not an antitrust case then.
Right.
There's no anti-competitive behavior going on.
Mm-hmm. You go back even further before the antitrust lawsuit. I know Tid remembers this very well. For the WWF back in the 80s and 90s, they were battling with all the athletic commissions throughout the United States who were either trying to take cuts of their gate or trying to prevent certain guys from competing because they didn't pass medicals, or they were trying to stop matches that would that the perception was there was going to be blood. They were trying to prevent those matches from happening. Tid himself was at the forefront back in the late 90s of having the Ontario Athletic Commission removed from governing independent wrestling in Ontario.
Right.
He was one of the guys that said, go fuck yourself. Get your hand out of my pocket. Yeah,
that tells you how far up everyone, how far everyone had their heads up their asses. They thought this was actually a real sport.
That's true.
There was a time when it was a sport, but that was like, in the 1800s, man.
Yeah, but there is a distinct difference between the two, and they should
before
be different.
There was money.
Yeah, but it's amazing how grown men for so long could go without telling the difference.
Right. I think they knew the difference. I think they didn't care because they saw an opportunity to grab something from somebody's pocket.
Right.
Antitrust cases are called inherently evil. Victims don't know their victims.
Right.
Carlos,
the insider's total line, like, yeah.
To shift gears on us, on you for a second, we would be remiss if we didn't ask you about this. And Tid said to me before the show, you think Carlos has been asked about this enough times? And the answer is yes. He's been asked about it probably 25 million times before. But we would be remiss if we didn't ask you about UFC 34, November 2nd, 2001. For those of you that, you know, didn't see it, you're not fight fans, or maybe you weren't even born yet, because we've got some young viewers out there. Take a look at this quick clip.
Cannot hold the fence, and McCarthy steps right in.
He's got to turn him around. He can't stay up there.
Down goes Carlos Newton.
He's out.
He's out.
So right there in that clip, first of all, what's your visceral reaction when you watch that? What do you feel? Do you have a response to that, or is it such ancient history that it just washes over you?
Then my response is, you know, basically the sport was still in this heyday. It was basically one where guys were more concerned about your safety at that time than they actually are now. And you know, for me, that was a situation where I basically said to John, I go, he's gonna pass out, and I'm gonna fall, he's gonna pass out. And he's like, let go of the fence or else I'm gonna disqualify you. So I let go of the fence, and then, you know, what I thought would happen would happen. And, you know, what I thought could possibly happen, happened. And, you know, it was one that I said, cool. But even the way things transpired after that, those are things that made me understand this is actually not structured like a sport. This is totally messed up. Totally messed up.
Did you feel any sense of, like, favoritism for the American guy or anything like that? Because it seemed obvious to a lot of people that watched that fight that when you had him in that choke and you're up against the fence, that he was out. At what point did you feel that Matt was actually out?
Pretty much when I was up against the fence and I told Big John, he's passing out, he's out. And because I know, even from my own experience, I've been choked out and my muscles still very strong and, you know, and vigorous. And I knew he was out on his feet, and it just took a little, just, and the only thing basically holding us up was me on the fence.
Right.
It was partly Big John's lack of experience also, you know, at the time.
In hindsight, cause I look at you, Tid, as a, you know, 25 year pro wrestler.
Sure.
You've taken bumps from that distance hundreds of times.
Yep.
Is there something in hindsight that could have happened on Carlos's end? Tuck the chin, do something different. Maybe he wouldn't have been knocked out, and he would have been the obvious winner.
It's a completely different surface. It's a completely different scenario. It is like night and day when you're taking that. I can remember watching this, and you could tell, like, I could tell right away by the body language that Matt was out. There was no doubt about it. And plus, there's no way that you take a cup the size that Carlos used to wear in the neck while he's choking you out in a standing triangle like that. Like, there's just no way that that happens and you come out of it unscathed. Mm. And Carl, like, listen, I used to see Carlos, you know, after we had done the interview, I'd see him in down, you know, in Toronto and stuff like that every once in a while in some of the clubs that I was, you know, running the door at and stuff like that. One of the strongest, most lean, fit dudes just standing there. So it wasn't like he was pounded into it. He just fell into it. And it was one of those things where, because that triangle was so tight, that the referee couldn't see what was happening.
Right.
The referee did a fantastic job, in my opinion. I always said that. Like, he was in there right away because what he saw and he reacted to. I can't take anything away from John on that one. But the problem was that he didn't see what led up to it. And then after that, what you saw was you saw Carlos just kind of get pushed to the back. You know what I mean? By the promotion, so to speak, because Matt Hughes was now the guy that they were going to try to put some, you know, put something behind. And you really saw kind of a shift and stuff like that. Yeah. Was Dana always a cunt?
Yeah, pretty much. But basically, at the end of the day, those are all things that told me that this sport is not structured like a sport. There is no competing interest. There's no competing interest.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's crazy. You even saw recently, like, Canelo just signed, like, a 2-fight deal with Eddie Hearn, who's another promoter stuff like that. You know what I mean? Because DAZN, the deal that he had and stuff like that. But they've got the ability to do this as individuals, as fighters and stuff like that, right? You know, so it's a huge difference. And you almost have to ask yourself, because, you know, a guy like Mark Ratner, who was the guy in the UFC, but before that, what was his job?
They were in on it, man.
He was the head of the Athletics Commission, man. The whole thing. Like I'm from Vegas. I know how a scam works.
Yeah. They're all in on the fix. They're like, hey, if we structure this sport like this, we can hold these young guys and make lots of money.
That's crazy.
Carlos, I'm curious to know, obviously, over the last year, it's impossible to go anywhere without hearing about someone or some place that's been ravaged by COVID-19. There's a story that's been out over the last little while. We had an update that came in earlier today about a man at one time who was referred to as the greatest pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, Fedor Emelianenko, who is in hospital in Russia fighting COVID-19. He did give an update saying that he's doing better and still refuses to retire. Still thinks he's got another fight left in him. Two-parter. Did you ever get to know Fedor when you were working in Pride, or sort of thoughts on Fedor? Obviously, we all wish him well, but do you agree with the sentiment that one of the best pound-for-pound fighters of all time? Yeah.
He was so stand-up, man. He was a real stand-up guy, real humble, down-to-earth. He was all business when he got in there. And, he had a real warrior spirit. Yeah, he was a real good guy, man.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, he's been going through a tough time with his health because of this whole thing, and we hope that he survives. He's surviving. We hope that he recovers quickly and gets out of hospital. And he last fought at the end of 2019, and he's talking about wanting to fight again, which feels crazy. He's 44 years of age. Mm-hmm. Do you have any desire to get in there and fight another professional fight?
Well, yeah, I'd like to do one more. I'd love to do one more in Japan. Mm. Yeah.
In Japan, did you say?
Oh, yeah, Japan.
Yeah.
Carlos, if you do get into another fight, I'm going to switch gears on you. Would the Dreddas provide you with any problem? When you were in your heyday, they were shorter. And as a former Dreddas who actually cut them 9 years ago this month, I can't believe that much time. I know that them shit's gotten my way a lot. There were certain things I couldn't do right. Would it impact the fight at all? Because they're longer now than they were when you were knocking, you know.
Yeah. But right now they're not too long.
Yeah, you got them. So here's a part two to that question, because I got these questions all the time, bro. One of the reasons why my dreads had to get cut is that, oddly, they were getting thin on the side. Thankfully, not the top, but the side. So my sides were like, it's like I had a dreadhawk at some point. I lost them on the sides and kept them. How do you maintain yours? Because they look strong, bro.
Yeah, that's just my head of hair, man. That's okay. We'll see how long it lasts.
My hair shit, I get you.
Yeah, even your hair has the Danny O curse.
Yeah, they did, man. It was. I miss them. I still have them, though, by the way.
You still have your dreads?
I actually still have them, yeah.
You are the biggest pack rat. Like, I thought you were weird keeping old cassette tapes.
What the hell are you going to do with your dreads?
Why do you have your dreads?
See, Carlos, they don't know, man.
Go get them?
It's an important, you know, it's a real... Are you serious?
Power is no dreads.
Yes, sir. Carlos knows, man.
No, it's
Carlos
not.
Knows.
It's voodoo shit.
Hey, Samson, can you go get your hair while we talk to Carlos and wrap up this interview? I want to see those threads before we go off the air.
Yo, I'd be remiss, because everybody always talks about it and stuff like that. They always talk about the Carlos Newton versus, you know, Matt Hughes fight and stuff like that. But really, if you want to see some really good stuff, go check out Carlos versus Pele. That is a fight that I love to go back to. Like, you had so many exciting moments when you were doing that. And I'm sure you hear it all the time, people just coming up and stuff like that, because you have the new school going on, right? How is that going? How are you finding it even more so? Like, tell us a little bit about the school and the stuff that you've had to overcome with all of this, you know, the pandemic stuff and everything that's going on right now. How's all of that going for you?
Well, right now I'm just riding it out, you know, the I'm not running classes right now. Everything's right. Just, you know, put on hold. Right now, I design and build houses and buildings. So I got a building project starting in the spring. So I'm just focused on that right now. And I trained last night with my son, me and my sons in the garage, and called it a day.
That's me. Yeah. Dude, you are the most laid back dude I've ever known in my entire life. And you haven't changed in 25 years. That is unbelievable, man. You've lived through so much and you've seen so much and everything like that, and had every reason to change. But to, like, to me, you're always going to be that humble, shy, that first time, like, I don't know what to say on the microphone because I've never done one of these things before. You're an amazing human being, dude. I just want to tell you that. Like, that's amazing.
We really appreciate it. And thank you so much. Before we say goodnight, I want to ask you, Tid invited us to his Twitch party this weekend. I don't even know what the hell Twitch is, but apparently we're going to his Twitch party and we're going to watch UFC this weekend. Do you have any thoughts on Poirier versus Conor McGregor?
No, not right now, man. Not right now. I wish Conor luck. I wish Conor luck. I think he's
all right. I think it's going to be interesting. I also think that the lightweight division is probably the most hotly contested in the UFC right now, right, Tid? I mean, there's so much drama coming out of the lightweights.
It's crazy. There's a ton of talent there that you know, that is being used, being exploited, and they need to be represented properly. Let's not forget that right now. Like, these are young guys that are putting their bodies on the line, that are ending up like stories like Spencer Fisher, you know what I mean? For absolutely no reason, when they do not need to be. The biggest thing that you hear from a lot of these guys is they're doing this for peanuts. They're putting all of this on the line for absolutely nothing, for a shot to be on TV. You know what I mean? It seems like. So they need to have some kind of representation. And I'm glad that there's guys that have the smarts and the balls to actually go forth with something like this. So, you know, and that's a dude like Carlos for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Daniel, where's those dreadlocks?
Check them out, bro.
You really have
them. I still got them, man.
You glued them back on?
You know what's funny? One of my acting coaches once told me, he's like, you know, you could always put them back in if the role calls for it. But yeah, I don't. I've never done it. My daughter is fascinated with these, man.
That's hilarious.
I can't get rid of them. So I rate you, Carlos, because you've had yours for a long time, bro. This is 13 years of my life here, homie.
Wow. Dan,
so I couldn't go no ways.
Dan, in order to thank Carlos for joining us and to say goodnight, and also to commemorate the appearance of your dreadlocks and the farewell to Donald Trump, can you give us a first of 2021 Daniel freestyle off the top of the dome for Carlos Newton?
Man, I feel like the States just took a dump before we flush the toilet, because we got rid of Trump. And trust me, if you like him, you a chump. But we won't start the shooting. I'll knock you out like I was Carlos Newton. Yo, check this out. The craziest thing of the year is my dreads were longer than yours. I got them right here. Yeah, I won't put them back in my damn head. But those were the day when I used to be a dread. But yo, I know you ahead and know how to keep them locked. And I know when you in the octagon, you like to rock and knock motherfuckers out and choke them out too. You know it's true. You can ask Matt Hughes. Nigga, you'll pay your dues, so we give you respect, and that's what you do when Danny O is on the set. Tid and Donnie and me, we all gotta say much respect to you for being on the show today.
How do I don't know how to do it. I'm not a guy. I don't know how to do it. Carlos, thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you,
brother.
All right, thank you. You. Carlos Newton, everybody. He's a stand-up dude. He's humble as hell, class act. so cool to talk to him after all these years, eh, Tid?
It's crazy. He hasn't changed a bit. So, like, you know, when all of this stuff gets back going and stuff, he is the kind of guy that if you have, you know, I'm not a big proponent of karate and martial arts classes and stuff like that, but he's a guy that you can learn so much more. So if you have a kid that needs to, you know, get into that environment, by all means in that area, please, like, look up Carlos when all of this stuff gets back up to going, because it's not necessarily all of the stuff, you know, and it is very much the stuff that he can teach you on the mats and on the floor and stuff like that. It's the mental. Carlos is such a down to earth dude, and he has been just this entire time through all of these years. So take advantage of it while you can.
We'll post his link up on the Godfathers of Podcasting.com. Yeah, that's NewtonMMA.com. That's NewtonMMA.com. They've got a school out in Pickering, Ontario, out on Liverpool Road. Nice venue, great place. They've got great ratings, great reviews. Students speak highly of the school. Go check it out. I'm sure that if you're in the Greater Toronto area and you go out to Newton MMA, you will not be disappointed. Dan, any last thoughts?
Yeah, Carlos Newton's the reason my brother owns a house in Pickering.
Is that right?
You didn't bring it up to him?
Well, there's a reason why I didn't, because, you know, it might be a bit personal, only because he built his MMA school behind a neighborhood that caused some people to leave the neighborhood because they blocked the school blocked their view of Lake Ontario.
Oh, and, my God. That's funny.
Yeah. And Brian got a good deal on his house. Thanks for that.
We should have had Brian on the show with Carlos.
Yeah, Brian's interviewed Carlos before and has sung his praises as well. But I was talking to him today, actually, saying we're going to have Carlos on the show. He's like, yo, guy, thank him, guy. I got a good deal on my house. The view's not so hype, but the house is dope.
That's amazing.
But, yeah, but Carlos got a hell of a view off of his place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, man. Yeah, I do want to shout something out real quick. I want to send a big shout out to the entire 21 Black Futures project. I want everyone to be on the lookout for 21 Black Futures, which is 21 short films that will be debuting on CBC and CBC Gem, the app, in February, which is Black History Month. I just shot a short film that will be part of that project in that series, man. So I'm excited to be part of that, and definitely look out for it.
Is that same short film you told me about?
Yeah, it's a
very cool concept.
It's a very different concept, because it's actually being put together by a theater company, Obsidian Theater Company, but is being shot as a short film. So it combines the theater aspect with short film. It's almost like it's mixed, like I am. And I've never done anything like that before. So it's like a theater production shot for television. What it's going to look like, I don't even know. But,
it's light skin TV.
There you go. It's on the way. It's on the way.
Yeah, the only thing I got going on for this weekend, like I said, is this Twitch thing starts at 10 p.m. twitch.tv/BigBenIsAngry. You can go check it out. We're going to have some fun. I have no idea how this thing works. I just know that I am less, I'm more high there. Let's just say that.
Does everyone have to have their own feed of the event, or can we see it through this Twitch thing?
No, you will not be able to watch it through the Twitch thing, because we are not getting sued.
Right.
That's
Dan's just trying to find a way to not pay for the event.
And you placed your camera in such a way.
No. But there are ways if you go searching, I'm sure. Dana White is looking for pirators.
Not force those methods of watching the UFC.
Apparently, apparently he got asked that question at the press conference that they were doing between Poirier and Carl and Connor. And they asked him, and he said, yeah, we got one of these guys. Tune in on Saturday. We're going to show you what's up. So Dana's already said that he's got something for pirators this year. And
all right.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting ride to see Dana versus the internet all over the world. Let's see what you got going on, man.
That feels like Lars versus Napster all over again. Let it go, bro. You can't win. Yeah. You can't win.
Right?
You shut down one site, 50 more will open. Thanks, gentlemen. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will definitely check out the Twitch party this weekend.
Yeah.
The UFC. I want to see Conor McGregor get in there and be his big, bloisterous self and have lots and lots of fun. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Make sure you go to thegodfathersofpodcasting.com, buy some merchandise, check out our sponsors, Kangol Hats, Camelback, Coffee Friend, eyeglasses.com, Factory Supply Outlet, Air Vape, Fight TV, Just CBD, and NordVPN. My name is Big Daddy Donnie. That's Notorious T.I.D. and your bro Danny O. Until next time, stay the fuck home.